Good evening, this is Mark Lynch, and this is Inquiry. My guest tonight is Claudia Horn. She is a lecturer in political economy in the Department of European and International Studies at King's College, London. And we're talking about her new book, Rosa Luxemburg's Herbarium, Radical Ecology and the Global Plantation. Claudia, welcome to the show. It's a pleasure to talk to you about this book.
Thanks. Thank you. Yes, hi, Mark. Thank you for inviting me.
This book took me totally by surprise. How did you learn about Rosa Luxemburg's Herbarium?
Many people it takes by surprise. I know about the Herbarium because between 2012 and 2016, I worked at the Rosa Luxemburg Foundation, which is an organization based in Germany. And it works on political education, and it's opened an office in New York. I was working there and read up a lot about Rosa Luxemburg, looked at all her publications, and then randomly it appeared, this Herbarium, only a German publication, and no one was talking about, and it struck me, and yeah. So then I kind of for a while I let it go, but it kept in my mind.
Where is it exactly right at this moment?
It's in Warsaw. It's in the National Archives in Warsaw.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now I'm going to have to ask you, and this is a reality of living today in the United States, I'm going to ask you to explain who Rosa Luxemburg was, okay?
Yeah. Rosa Luxemburg is one of the most important, one of the classic socialist icons. She was a very important Marxist. She was a leader of the Social Democratic Party in Germany at the beginning of the 20th century, the end of the 19th century as well. She founded the Spartacus League and the Communist Party in Germany. She also edited several journals. She was a Jewish Polish woman who fled first to Zurich to study and then became one of the most important labor leaders in the German Social Democratic Party, and very critical also, very non-dogmatic view. And so she's very famous because of that. And she got assassinated together with Karl Liebknecht in 1919 by Freikorps for her anti-military anti-war, anti-colonial stance.
How did this herbarium was mostly put together while she was in prison, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How was this saved? How was this person who's accused of being such a radical? How was this herbarium preserved? Like, whose hands got it first?
Yeah. After her assassination, all of her writings were kept with her party friends, and also later published. With her party friend Libby, and the family left to the U.S. So first, the herbarium actually was of what we know of. Went with her estate, with her estate to the U.S. And then it came back to Poland, to the Communist Party archives, and then it was rediscovered in 2000, in the early 2000s, in the Warsaw archives, and was then cataloged in 2009.
How many specimens are actually in the herbarium?
77.
And how many have you reproduced in this book?
It's around 95.
So, and they represent the actual photographs of each page, correct?
Yes. It's a very beautiful edition, and our books really, we spend a lot of time to think about how we make this book. It has the original reproductions of the herbarium pages.
Wow.
For the first time with the transcription and translation of the original botanical annotations as well that are handwritten on these pages, and including also some drawings that Rosa Luxemburg made.
I love the drawings, by the way. I mean, who knew? Who knew that she could do biological drawings? They were wonderful.
Yeah.
Now, there's also reproduced letters that she wrote while she was in prison to different people. Who were the people that she wrote to?
Yeah. So she wrote especially to her friends. So there are, especially in this edition, there are a lot of letters to Sophie Nicht, where she shared most of her feelings about nature and the interconnectedness with nature, and so those are most of the letters that are in the book.
Now, when I read this book and I actually looked at it, and for people who don't know, herbariums are actual specimens of the plants or the flowers, fixed in a page in a book with notes. And how many volumes? She had several volumes of these, right?
Yeah, 18 overall. So it was 17 notebooks are with herbarium specimens, and the 18th one is with botanical notes that she actually copied. And the 17 notebooks were compiled between 1913 and 1918. First one where she wasn't in prison yet, from her house and garden, and from when she lived in Berlin, and then the other ones were compiled in prison.
How did she do an herbarium while she was in prison? Did people send her flowers?
Yeah, so her friends, like Mathilde Jakob, for instance, they sent her bouquets. And also some previously kept sort of herbarium pages that she then pressed and collected, and we also see that in her notes. We see actually this is from the bouquet from Mathilde Jakob, for instance, and sometimes like there's also for Christmas she got some flowers, and so we have all the dates, and so it's very impressive because it was also her way of communicating with the outside, and it is also impressive because while in prison in some of her prisons she could have a garden, like there was a prison yard, and one she also had a little vegetable garden, and so she actually was also she planted beans. So in one of the specimen, one of the pages, she actually collects the beans, and there is also another one where a leaf gets blown.
Oh, right.
Mm-hmm.
Now people should realize that this isn't just a collection of pressed pretty flowers. This is a scientific collection of herbal plant specimens. She had scientific training, correct?
Yes, that's also what few people know, that when she first went to Zurich, she fled from Poland. In Poland, women couldn't study. So she went to Zurich at the end of the 19th century and then started studying botany and zoology. She also was very knowledgeable about bird songs, for example. So she was very, very interested in the flora and fauna and understanding the world, and was very interested in the natural sciences. And that was really her botanical annotations are mostly correct. I transcribed them all and really researched them all, and so it is extremely impressive for all of this other production she also had throughout her life, and her all her political engagement, her teaching, and her speeches and her travels and everything. Yeah.
When I read this book, I didn't know what to expect, and it gave me a whole different perspective on Rosa Luxemburg because of the ways that she wrote in these letters. to her friends about things like a cloud formation or different bird species that were coming to the prison yard, she had a real deep appreciation and love for the natural world.
Yeah, yeah. It was. I selected these letters, to Jeff Zetkin, Stephen Barron, and so on. Especially those that had these passages, of course, that were most relevant, and also to present to readers Rosa Luxemburg in her own words, because it would be, of course, to write about her love to nature, but I think reading those letters, as you say, is very, very inspiring. Also, if we think about the climate crisis now and our despair, and how she, even from prison, could connect to nature and that gives her so much life and appreciation for life.
Well, reading her letters, it really seems like the natural world gave her uplift. It gave her joy. And that she just loved talking about it, looking at it. I mean, she would find here she is in prison. And she would look out and see a cloud formation and be absolutely fascinated and described really beautifully the cloud formation. She even commented on the structure of the cosmos. I think it was page 49 in the book. She actually talked about reading something, and she was fascinated about thinking about the structure of the cosmos. She was a pretty amazing scientific thinker.
I guess we call that also sort of pre-disciplinary, which a lot of this kind of broad understanding got lost in the separation of the disciplines, right? So nowadays we study very specific in our disciplines, but Rosa Luxemburg shows us that that for her it was so important to understand the world in all its facets, and I think and the book talks a lot about that also, how important that was to her theory and her critique of capitalism, her critique of imperialism, because she makes always these connections between the extinction of the natural world she talks, for instance, about the extinction of the warblers,
right,
in Europe, and she compares that to the extinction of the indigenous people in North America, and that immediately is connected to her critique of capitalism. So that really shows how her understanding of nature is very connected to this, also to her political economy understanding.
Would you now call her an environmentalist?
Yes, I would call her sort of a critical political ecologist, a critical environmentalist. Yes, she also says nature for her is not a refuge. And she also has a very, in this one letter that I quote, she talks about a lady who talked very nicely about nature as a sort of pristine, beautiful element, the sunset. And Rosa Luxemburg always emphasizes how she also in nature sees suffering. And I think that's very inspiring for a critical environmentalism today, that doesn't only look at nature as something that needs to be preserved in conservation areas, right, or something distinct from people, but that that we need to understand also the connection between sort of structural inequalities and the protection or of nature.
Especially indigenous people, in which the environment, they're part of the environment at that moment. I think that's a big movement right now in environmentalism, is to have the indigenous people be part of any decisions that are made about the land.
Yeah.
I know that's happening in Canada.
Yeah, yeah. And in Latin America as well, it is very, very present. This is where I did most of my empirical research as well. And exactly because of Rosa Luxemburg's emphasis on land and on also in her economic theory, the accumulation of capital, where she writes about capitalism as appropriating foreign lands, This is a very important legacy for radical environmental movements today that emphasize this issue of especially of land tenure and land rights as really fundamental to saving the planet. Mm.
Talk to me about your research in South America. What were you researching?
I was researching the conservation of the Amazon and European investment in Amazon conservation since the 1990s, because the G7 countries and the World Bank have since the end of the 1980s, since the 90s, really invested heavily in Amazon conservation. But I also analyzed that critically because in the 1980s or at the end, they were discussing the impacts of debt, the debt crisis in Latin America that was really disastrous, and that was fueling deforestation. And what the G7 leaders decided, without, of course, the participation of Brazil or of the tropical forest countries, they decided, well, we won't cancel any debt, but because we see that debt repayment is causing deforestation, we will, we'll try to influence them to institutionalize environmental policy. So it was a very hypocritical, in a way, strategy at the heart of today's climate finance also, which is really kind of like a plaster on the problem. And so the book is very critical of this insufficient response, and also the fact that this international influence has promoted very much market-based instruments such as carbon markets and emissions markets.
You're listening to WICN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. My guest tonight is Claudia Horn. She is a lecturer in political economy at the Department of European and International Studies at King's College London. But we're talking about a book. It's actually a book within a book that she has published, Rosa Luxemburg's Herbarium, Radical Ecology and the Global Plantation. Claudia, there's also a number of essays that you wrote throughout this book in between different sections. Were these essays that are previously published, or are these essays that you wrote specifically for this book?
I wrote them specifically for the book, yes, drawing on Rosa Luxemburg's critique, exactly.
Mm-hmm. So talk to me about that. Talk to me about how you see how Rosa Luxemburg fits into the current discussion about the environment.
The idea of the book was to make it available. We talked about the herbarium, make the herbarium available as well as the letters, but then also try to explore how this herbarium opens a new window onto Rosa Luxemburg's ecological thinking. How can, through this botanical practice and her letters, together with her writings on imperialism and colonialism, how can we kind of discuss, sort of her insights onto environmental destructions? The book talks about how she talks about species loss, colonial exploitation, and kind of integrates all of those elements in her work to present Rosa Luxemburg as as what we could say like eco-Marxist thinker, even though she didn't explicitly formulate an environmental theory. And then what the book, so this is throughout these essays, the book reconsiders Rosa Luxemburg's work on the accumulation of capital, imperialism, on colonialism. She wrote a lot about pre-capitalist societies and how capitalism destroys these societies. So where she considers how non-capitalist societies actually take care much better of the elderly and of the needs of society. So this is what the essays analyze, and then also it discusses the relevance of Rosa Luxemburg's lens for sort of a critique of also the relationship between plant knowledge and colonial capitalism. This is where the book also discusses the critical role of botany itself in colonial research, in the development of monocrop plantations.
Right, right.
And also the appropriation of indigenous knowledge about plants. and also the marginalization of indigenous knowledge about plants.
You also write about the exploration of the world by colonial powers back in the 18th and 19th century, about how that a lot of people who went out and explored the world were for colonial powers, and also their plant collection and their animal collection and bird collections were all done for these colonial powers in Europe. So that the natural history exploration, especially places like South America and Africa, were for colonial powers.
Yes, yes. They are still often presented as explorations, but of course they were from the beginning very much with a commercial intent. From the beginning with a commercial intent, all the study of plants was immediately also already with the intent of like how can it be useful to European industry, European markets, European investment. Yes, exactly. And oftentimes it would also, as I showed one example, where German explorers actually also took indigenous children with them. It was also very racist from the early time.
That's actually happened in several cases, including in North America too, in the early days of exploration, where indigenous people were brought back to European powers, and usually they died fairly quickly because they were not immune to different diseases. Getting back to Rosa Luxemburg's natural history, Did this book affect you personally, too, putting this together? I mean, were you a person who was interested in the natural world at all?
Yes. Well, my research is actually in critical political economy, I would say, or in these topics. So I was I've been a huge fan of Rosa Luxemburg's work.
But what about the natural world? I'm saying, do you have any part? Are you interested in flowers, birds, whatever?
Oh yes, yeah, of course. Well, mostly during the pandemic.
I think that's when a lot of people got interested in nature during the pandemic.
Yes, yes. At the time, I was living in Belém, in the Amazon, Brazil, and I developed this personal also connection with plants there. I had something like 4 plants in my apartment, and did a lot of trips with friends, and so that started there, and then also together with my grandmother, for instance. My grandfather has always had a very large garden, and then when I decided to do this project, it also, for me, it became a new learning experience as well, since I don't have a background in botany, but through this work, through this transcription, also learned how difficult or how many names there are for different plants.
Rosa knew those names. Mm-hmm. That was the amazing thing. Did she have reference books with her in the prison cell? I mean, how did she just remember all these scientific names? I mean, do you know anything about that? I mean, did she have reference books? It seems like she had an awful lot of natural history knowledge in her head. Mm-hmm. It was incredible.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
She had those. She had those books. She had several botany books in her cell. So she had a lot of reading material that she also refers to. Yes,
that's amazing. Now, one of the most interesting things for me, I'm a birder. I'm a person who looks at birds a lot. That she wanted the call of the great tit, which is related to our chickadees, but it's a European species, inscribed on her gravestone. She just wanted the call, sweet, sweet.
Yeah,
and that's all she wanted on her gravestone. Where is she buried now?
She's buried in Berlin.
Did they put Svi Svi on her gravestone?
No, I believe no.
Don't you think that's a tremendous loss? somebody should put that at least in an addition somewhere on the gravestone. I think that would be fantastic.
Yeah. She said, I have it here on my grave, as in my life, there will be no pompous phrases. Only two syllables will be allowed to appear on my gravestone, sweet, sweet. That's the call made by the great mouse. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what she would say.
I would love to see that in her gravestone. How did you get, we actually only have like a minute or two left, but how did you get interested in Rosa Luxemburg?
When I was working at the foundation mostly.
Had you known about Rosa Luxemburg before then?
Yes, but more marginal, I would say. Coming from Germany, of course, she is a very common name. But really, until I came to New York and became more politicized, walked by Wall Street, I wasn't studying Rosa Luxemburg during my undergrad, for example.
So you lived in New York for a while?
Yeah.
That's an education, too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Especially not Wall Street.
Not very much in
plans. What, mm-hmm. What did you say?
Not very much in planned science, but yeah.
Are you planning on writing other books about Rosa Luxemburg?
I'm not sure. I'm considering actually expanding perhaps a bit more. Because of course my idea is also to make the whole herbarium available.
Yes, I would like perhaps, that. Yeah. I would really like that. Yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah, right. It's so wonderful and it's so expansive. And also I want to get to know more about the places where she collected the plants, how they look now, and mm-hmm. sort of perhaps do a project that tracks those places.
Oh, yeah. I think that's a great idea. I think we're completely out of time. My guest tonight has been Claudia Horn. She's a lecturer in political economy at the Department of European and International Studies at King's College London. But we've been talking about her new book, and it's really a fascinating book, Rosa Luxemburg's Herbarium, Radical Ecology and the Global Plantation. Claudia, it's been a real pleasure.
Thank you. Yes, thank you very much, Mark.
You're listening to WICN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. Good night.